Blog Talk Radio.
Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and once again, I want to say thank you for taking time out of your busy life to join me on the broadcast. I hope that everyone had a good Thanksgiving. I hope that some of you, maybe not all of us, were able to have their families over for dinner and enjoyed this very, very special holiday. And I hope that all of you that have been traveling and have to return will come back safe and well and not be sick or ill. And that is my hope and prayer for you. It was 4 days ago that a top nuclear scientist was assassinated in what appears to be a terrorist hit in Iran. I have a lot I want to talk to you about on this subject and make some very important observations. But before I do that, I want you to hear this special, very brief report from CBS News' Roxana Saberi on this scientist who was assassinated. Let's listen.
Iran is accusing Israel and promising revenge for the ambush shooting death of a top scientist who has been described as a key figure behind Iran's nuclear bomb program almost 2 decades ago. The attack happened on Friday in a suburb of Tehran, the capital. Roxana Saberi is in our London bureau with the latest. Roxana, good morning.
Good morning, Dana. Iran's Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei is calling for the assassins to be punished. Iran's president is also promising revenge while blaming Israel for the attack. The comments come a day after Mohsen Fakhrizadeh was killed in broad daylight while traveling near Tehran. Iran's defense minister said the car carrying the scientist was shot at before a truck bomb exploded nearby. Iran says Fakhrizadeh was a college professor, but the U.S. and Israel have alleged he led a secret nuclear arms program. And in 2018, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu singled out Fakhrizadeh in a news conference, accusing him of conducting nuclear weapons work under the guise of a civilian program. Israel has not yet commented on yesterday's attack, but Iran has accused it of killing other nuclear scientists in the past decade. Whoever killed Fakhrizadeh, his death is likely to raise tensions between Washington and Tehran. Earlier this month, President Trump reportedly asked senior advisors about options to attack Iran's main nuclear site, but was dissuaded. Neither the White House nor the Biden transition team has commented yet on yesterday's killing, but President-elect Biden has suggested he'll rejoin an international nuclear deal that President Trump left in 2018. Ed?
Roxana, thanks.
Well, I want to make some observations on this Mohsen Fakhrizadeh data. There seems to be, in the last 30, 40 years maybe, there seems to be a trend among the Iranian government leaders assassinating key figures in their military, in their government, and in this case, a supposed nuclear scientist, although he was more of a dealer in nuclear technology components and devices more than a scientist. There's a trend here. I have a really good Iranian friend. Her name is Mabi Husseinpour. And in the next few months, We will be writing a book together. It's called A Lion in Persia, The Assassination of Dr. Ardeshir Houstonpour, her brother. Her brother was one of Iran's top nuclear scientists, and he was killed on January 27, 2017. That was more than 13 years ago, January of 2007. And Mabi has always suspected that her brother was assassinated by the government because he wouldn't enrich the uranium beyond the limits. And of course, Iran and the government pawned it off on Mossad, on Israel, of having done this. That was one of their theories. They would never publicly admit that he was assassinated or that they had anything to do with it. Well, in the case of this so-called scientist, once again, it's being accused. Israel is in the forefront of being the person accused of assassinating or doing away with this top scientist. Every scientist I can think of that has ended up dead in Iran, Iran has always blamed this act, this death, on Israel. And in this case, it's no different. They're once again accusing Israel of a terrorist attack. I can't help to make an observation about the timing of this event with the possibility that Joe Biden could be president next month, January in 2021. Once again, you heard the Biden administration is interested in sitting down at the negotiation table with Iran and having another go at the nuclear deal. Well, a couple of more things I want to tell you about this so-called scientist. You can't find any sign of his degree in any university in Iran. There's no record of it. And one of the things this man did, this Mohsen Fakhrizadeh did, was that he plagiarized two chapters from Ardeshir Houstonpour's book and published it as his own work after his death. This was something Mabi told me. Her brother, of course, was a genius as a scientist. He worked so hard. He was publicly recognized in Iran for his accomplishments, and he published it in a book. Well, this scientist that was murdered a few days ago, he took two chapters from Ardeshir's book, plagiarized it, published it as his own work right after his death. And Mabi told me that it was 4 years ago on her TV program that she pointed out that this scientist, this Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, was one of the key figures involved in the plot to assassinate her brother. Very, very interesting about this scientist. Now, he was recognized in Iran as one of the top people to advance their military program. Now, Iran, of course, has never admitted to having a nuclear weapons program, and they've tried to keep it secret. And this is why we had this nuclear deal 5 years ago. And it's reported that this man secretly continued to work on arms development, and he would have been a key figure in any Iranian push for the bomb. Now, of course, his death, his killing, is the latest in a series of assassinations, as I said to you, of nuclear scientists in Iran in recent years that the Islamic Republic has blamed on Israel. It's my contention, folks, that this is not the work of Israel or the United States. It's my contention, and Mabi said this to me too, that the government probably decided, you know, with the incoming Biden administration coming in January, it's sitting down at the negotiating table in the near future, that this man had done their bidding for long enough, and it was time to get rid of him for whatever reason. And of course, when they do this kind of dirty work, they're quick to blame it on Israel. And this is probably the work of the government. You may say, well, this man was complying with them. He was involved in nuclear technology, components, devices. Why would they do this? Well, why does the government do anything like this? They have a plot and a reason for all of it. So if you think about what's happened and the incoming, supposed incoming Biden administration, you can put all the pieces together and find out what's going on here. He was the man to ensure that he delivered the bomb for the Ayatollahs. He was also a ballistic missiles expert. He was closely involved in Iran's missile development. Now, the killing happened in Absard. It was a village just east of the capital, Tehran. And it's a retreat place for the Iran elite. And Iran state television said that an old truck with explosive hidden under a load of wood blew up near a sedan carrying Fakhrizadeh. Now, his sedan stopped, and at least five gunmen emerged and raked the car with rapid gunfire. And that's what happened. He died later on at the hospital. They were unable to revive him. This is so interesting to me. And I suspect they are behind it because my dear friend, her brother, Ardeshir Husinpour, was the victim of what we believe was another assassination of the top Iranian scientists. I want to talk to you about that this morning. And I want to read to you the article I wrote for Mabi, which is going to be part of the book we're going to write together next year, entitled A Lion in Persia, The Assassination of Dr. Ardeshir Husinpour. Well, for the last 14 years, since his mysterious death on January 15, 2007, Mahbubi Husinpour, she's been a powerful voice for her brother, refusing to accept the government's official version that Ardeshir, her brother's death, was just accidental. Of course, his body was found in his apartment. His wife, Sarah, found him lying on the floor. The heater was running on high, and he was unresponsive and declared dead. And it was their contention it was some kind of gas poisoning. Well, but the government also said this. They concluded that his death was the result of not only of a gas poisoning, that's just one scenario. And they said, well, it was heart disease, a jealous lover, and finally, an assassination plot conceived by Israel. And this is the same thing they blamed on with the recent death of this scientist. Well, Mabi refuses to accept any of these scenarios. And instead, she has been busy the greater part of her life launching a campaign to get the truth of her brother's death out to the media. But unfortunately, she's run into a brick wall of fear and political correctness. Now, this is the same situation with our President Donald Trump. The truth that this election has been stolen from him, and the evidence is overwhelming, but the media, the liberal media, refuses to really even give Donald Trump the benefit of the doubt that there was the possibility of fraud. Not whatsoever. They continue to say that he's holding out, that he's making the peaceful transfer of power impossible, that he's a dictator, he refuses to leave office because he's a sore loser. That's the same way the media has been treating my dear friend Mabi. They never will allow the story of her brother to be published on the internet because of fear and political correctness. Well, I'm going to help her change that. She actually mentioned to me a couple of news outlets. The BBC, she emailed, they never returned any of her emails, and Voice of America Persian rejected her story about her brother for fear of consequences from the Iranian regime. Now, Mabi is an activist not only for her brother, but also for a regime change in Iran. She's a loyal supporter of the Pahlavi dynasty, and the media, because of that, has boycotted her story. They are opposed, I think, to women like Mabi, who are dedicated to the Shah. The media understands that accusing Iran of assassinating their top scientists strikes at the heart of the Islamic Republic. It exposes them as a cruel, an oppressive government, and the world cannot and must not know the real story or the real face of this government and what goes on behind the Iron Curtain of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Now, it was in October of 2010 that my friend Mabi traveled from Iran to the American Embassy in Nairobi, Kenya. It was at this time. She still lived in Iran. She's been living here in Los Angeles now since 2016. But back in 2010, she decided, I need to go to the American Embassy in Nairobi, Kenya. She stayed there for 55 days, late into the month of December, pleading with the security officers to contact Washington and put pressure on Iran. She explained the tragic story of how she now believed her brother was assassinated. Why? Well, because in the case of her brother, Ardashir refused to enrich the uranium stockpile to 20%, which far exceeded the legal limits. Now, here's the difference. This current scientist that was assassinated was busy trying to do that. He was busy behind the scenes trying to implement this secret nuclear program, whereas Ardashir refused to. So in the case of Ardashir, she told the American Embassy security agents in Nairobi, please contact the State Department and tell them my story. Iran can't be trusted with their nuclear ambition. If the United States, Mabi said, would put more sanctions on the government, it could lead to another revolution, and the people can overthrow this evil regime. Well, mark my word, Donald Trump has been very tough on this government. He is not going to let them get by with their nuclear ambitions whatsoever. And he has put sanction after sanction, okay, on these leaders. In fact, this scientist that was assassinated, he had been blacklisted by us, by our government, for the last 10 years because of enriching the uranium stockpile. Here's the difference. This is what Donald Trump did to stop the Iranian nuclear ambition, to speak to the human rights of Iranian people, to support them, to be behind the Iranian people. It'll be the complete opposite with Joe Biden if he is actually declared president. He will want to go to the negotiating table, and this will be another Obama administration disaster. Well, Mabi back in 2010 tried to warn us. And fortunately, her pleas fell on deaf ears. Instead, the Obama administration instead of them putting more tough sanctions on Iran, well, you know what they did. They empowered and enriched the mullahs with more than $150 billion in sanction relief money back in July of 2015. And actually, it was paving the way in the next decade for Iran to develop a nuclear weapon because of the Sunrise Clause. Well, what happened under Obama and Biden? The Iranian people were betrayed. In this past election, there were thousands of Iranians who voted for Joe Biden. Of course, you never know if their vote was switched by Dominion. We have evidence there was plenty of that going on. But again, the Iranians that live here, Iranian Americans, overwhelmingly supported Donald Trump. But what happened when Obama was president and Biden was vice president? Well, they betrayed the Iranian people. In 2009, they had both refused to listen to the cries of the Iranian protesters during the bloody presidential election uprising. And now, in 2015, they were celebrating a dangerous deal that would eventually allow this evil regime to develop nuclear weapons. Well, I want to spend some time here. We've talked a little bit about this scientist that was assassinated. And again, I believe wholeheartedly his own government did it to him for their reasons. I want to spend some time talking about Ardashir Houssampour, Mabi's brother. He was a tremendous human being. And let's contrast the kind of person he was in comparison to this scientist who was murdered. Well, Ardashir was born on December 21st, 1962 in Tehran, and it was during the Yalta celebration, which is the longest night of the year. At that time, in 1962, Iran was a prosperous nation under the leadership of the Shah, Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. And just recently, at that time, he had implemented important reforms known as the White Revolution. And one such reform in 1962 granted women the right to vote. In 1962, the year that Ardashir was born, Iran was a very secular and free culture. They had no oppressive religious restrictions on them. Of course, that was to come later. Women at that time were not required to wear a veil when going out publicly. And the sexes, of course, were not segregated. You can see pictures in the time of the Shah dynasty. Men and women are flocking together at the beach, dressed in bathing suits. Well, life under the Shah was a celebration of diversity, was a celebration of freedom. Ardashir's name had been specifically chosen by his father, Nasrallah, to commemorate national pride. The name Ardashir, well, literally in Persian means holy king. Ardashir's parents wanted to instill on their children the richness of Persian history. Really, they did that. They wanted to push back the influences of Islam from the 7th century. And their family book was the Book of Kings, which was written by the famous Persian poet Ferdowsi. Ferdowsi had preserved the Persian language and the history and the mythology, and did that to keep that from being erased by the Arab influence on Iran. Let's talk a little bit about Ardashir and his childhood. Well, from the age of 7, already at that young age, Ardashir had aspirations of becoming a scientist. He loved nature and was very concerned about the environment and the diseases that were cutting the lifespan of his people. At the time of the revolution in 1978, Ardashir was 16 years old, and he was busy pursuing his scientific endeavors. His mind wasn't occupied with Khomeini and the vision for a new Iran. Instead, he was concentrating on mathematics and on physics. He had a vision to transform the environment of Iran and construct a pipe system for irrigation, changing the deserts of Iran, into a forest ecosystem. So you can see here at the early age, he was a man on a mission. Ardashir's early life was filled with really outstanding achievements. By the age of 19, he had earned the highest degree in martial arts. He was a black belt. While serving in the army, he received an award for braveness and leadership. After his tour of duty in the war with Iraq, Ardashir continued to pursue his educational career. He earned 4 degrees in electronics, engineering, computer, and metallurgy. He went on to earn a Master of Science degree in physics and got his PhD in atomic physics. His outstanding achievements enabled him to become one of Iran's top nuclear scientists, specializing in uranium enrichment. Now notice, as I mentioned to you, this so-called scientist, he really didn't show any kind of the moral achievements that Ardashir did. He didn't show any degree. You can't find that anywhere. Whereas Ardashir was an outstanding achievement. And he was a very moral, very honest, very dedicated person compared to this scientist that was assassinated. From the time Ardashir was recognized as one of Iran's top nuclear scientists, he had been at that time under government scrutiny and surveillance. Now, Mabi, his sister, explains the various reasons that she believed led to his assassination in 2007. She says the government, was very jealous of his intellect. Ardashir was a handsome man, and you can see that in his pictures. And for that reason alone, the mullahs hated him. They would always complain about him wearing sunglasses, believing that would tempt women. They complained about his shirt sleeves being too high on his arms, revealing too much skin. This, of course, is because of the extreme dress code in Iran. You know, the women have to wear a veil. They can't wear makeup. They can't do their nails. They should wear more than a veil. They should wear, you know, the full chador. And they don't believe in women showing too much skin to tempt men. It's always the fault of women. Well, in the same way, Ardashir, come on, take off those sunglasses, Ardashir. Make sure your sleeves come all the way down to your wrists. Don't show too much skin. And he was a very handsome man, so just for that reason alone, the mullahs were jealous of him. They didn't like him. Well, but the number one reason for the government assassinating him was really because of his opposition to the Bushehr nuclear site. Ardashir was invited to tour this site, and he spoke out against its usefulness to the government at that time. It's not useful, he said. It's not that important. It's too old and too expensive. It's not good for national interest. Well, that certainly made him at odds with the government. Here's this great intellect, this great achiever, and he's saying, we don't need this nuclear site. Well, Ardashir's objection at that time, it just enraged the government. And when he refused to enrich the Iranian to 20%, which was beyond the legal limit, this act of defiance, well, it sealed his fate. The government hated his moral character. His morality, his kindness, and honesty put him at odds with the mullahs. Now, one of his favorite rituals before teaching class was to quote from the Persian poet Ferdowsi. He never quoted from the Quran. And in the eyes of the government, this act alone was treasonous. Well, Mabi explains what she believed happened on the night of his assassination on January 15th, 2007. Ardashir receives a call. He's speaking with his wife, Sarah, and the persons on the other end instructed him to meet with some important officials alone in his apartment. He urged his wife to stay behind, take care of your ailing father, and Ardashir then drove back home alone. Neighbors reported seeing him pacing back and forth on his balcony at 3 a.m., waiting anxiously for his meeting. And Mabi believes sometime later, when Ardashir retired for the night, that government agents climbed atop his apartment building and dropped poisonous pellets down through the chimney. They waited a few minutes. They entered his apartment. They turned up the heater and laid a blanket across his body. And that they wanted to give the appearance that Ardashir fell asleep. He died as a result of gas poisoning from a malfunctioning heater. The problem with that is, when the heater was later inspected, it was found to be functioning perfectly. So it's been 10 long agonizing years since Mabi pleaded with the people at the American Embassy in Nairobi. And we know the rest of the story. But we're going to write this book together so that Ardashir's legacy will never be forgotten and the truth will be told to the media. And that is the story of Ardashir Husseinpour. I want to take a short break right now. I want you to hear this dynamic worship song from Matt Redman, and I'll be right back in just 4 minutes.
Hands up, hearts open, wide as the we lift your name high, but all the other names fade away.
A song of great beauty and worship from Matt Redman, Wide as the Sky, which is a perfect interlude or a segue to what I want to talk to you on the remaining of our program, and that is reflect on the beauty of God. We see so much ugliness in the world, death, assassinations, hatred, bigotry. There's so much ugliness around us, and that's what I want to do these remaining minutes, is talk to you about the beauty of God and how that relates to my Iranian friends. All throughout the Bible, God reveals his character, and the inspired writers use terms such as almighty, holy, majestic, and they use many other words to paint a portrait of God's character. In Revelation chapter 4, the Apostle John gets a profound glimpse of the throne of God in heaven. And Jah describes the one sitting on the throne as brilliant as gemstones like jasper and carnelian, and the glow of an emerald circles his throne like a rainbow. Well, words are almost inadequate to describe the power, the purity, the majesty of God. God is indeed awesome and majestic. He's beautiful in his character, as we see here in Revelation chapter 4. Well, now the Bible teaches we are created in God's image. We reflect his image in an imperfect way, in our character, and in the way we treat other people. So we're created in his spiritual image. And because of this, because of this great truth, we too reflect the attributes of his power, in his purity, in our fallen world. It's an imperfect reflection, but nonetheless we do reflect that. Sin has damaged and distorted our image, and yet in spite of that reality, human beings, you and me, we still reflect God's character in many wonderful ways. Well, let me tell you about one of the best ways I can think of in this reflection of God's image in our character. I have some wonderful Iranian friends, Yasemin and Roshanak. They are both gifted and talented in painting. Yasemin and Roshanak have displayed on their Facebook pages examples of their watercolor paintings. And when I saw this, I was so impressed by the detail and the beauty of their work that I asked, hey, can I please post your paintings on my Facebook page? Well, they both excitedly agreed. Many of my friends who saw their paintings on my page were awestruck at the careful detail and the beauty of their work. And in fact, right after this broadcast, I will be featuring two of their watercolor paintings, so you can see what I'm trying to say in this story. Now, I write many books, as you know, and I am careful in those books to be accurate in the way I paint with words. Well, both Yasemin and Roshanak paint beautifully with their brush strokes and are very careful to reflect accurately what they both see in their mind's eye, in their imagination. And what I find so amazing about their paintings and the choices that they've made, here's what I see that's so amazing. Well, you know, Yasemin and Roshanak live in a culture of fear and oppression. They live in Iran. They are surrounded by the ugliness of a government that suppresses their freedom. Living in Iran is a day-to-day struggle, and despite the ugliness of their life, both of their paintings reflect a beauty in the midst of ugliness that captivates the eyes. They both choose to paint the goodness and beauty of life. But yet Yasemin and Roshanak are surrounded by this oppression, right? But they don't allow the darkness and the ugliness of their culture to tarnish their creativity. They could paint about a lot of things, I guess. I guess if they wanted to, they could have painted the ugly scene of the assassination of this Iranian scientist. Or they could punish the beatings of women or prisoners on death row and their suffering. They could paint that if they wanted to, because that's part of their culture. That's part of what they live under every day. But instead, they have a message to the world. They have a message to you and me. Instead, they paint the beauty of life to remind each one of us that despite our circumstances, the goodness and beauty of God continues to shine and quench the darkness. Well, my Iranian friends, Yasemin and Roshanak, they're a great example to you and me. What does that say to us? What it says to me is we need to take the gifts and the abilities that God has given us and shine them brightly into a darkened world of sin. When we do that, we are truly reflecting the beauty of God in an ugly world that is desperate for hope and freedom. This is what Jesus did. He came into a world that rejected him. He came into a world of darkness and ugliness and sin. And he said, I am the light of the world. And his goodness and his beauty and his love shined and penetrated the darkness of sin and ugliness. Jesus came to give us life and life abundantly. He came to display in the perfect way the beautiness and the character of who God is, because he was God in human flesh. And so as the great artist, as the great storyteller, he painted with words the beauty of who God is. He shared stories of his love, his compassion, his forgiveness. And in the midst of darkness and oppression and ugliness and sin, Jesus shined the light of truth so brightly that all who walked with him, men and women, were drawn to that beauty in the ugliness all around them. They were drawn to that compassion, that beauty, that loveliness. You see, Jesus painted perfectly with his words and deeds the beauty and the character of God. My dear Iranian friends, reflect his beauty as well. Today, if you are weary and overwhelmed with the suffering and the sorrow and the ugliness all around you, there is one who can change your world in an instant. He can come into your heart and into your life and give you hope and give you freedom and give you forgiveness. And I'm talking about the beauty of Jesus. He reflects the beauty of the Creator God. He is a light in the darkness of this oppressive world. And when you come to him and reach out and receive his gift of forgiveness and eternal life by faith alone, he changes your heart, your mind, your perceptions, and makes you beautiful all over again. That's why our arms are outstretched wide as the sky, as Matt Redman says. I hope and pray that you will meet him in a personal way and discover his beauty and his truth. Thank you so much for joining me today on The Cross in the Desert. It's always a pleasure and a privilege to come to you. And I will see you again on Thursday for our next broadcast. I want you to have an incredible, safe, and great week. And I will see you again on Thursday. God bless you.